Yeah, I want to take a break, go keep going. Let's do one more, okay. Judge Rustani, you ready to do one more? Okay. We'll hear from the parties in the third case of the morning. Joyce Higgs versus Costa Crozier.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Richard McAlpin on behalf of Costa Crozier. The trial court below abused its discretion by improperly applying Federal Rule of Evidence 403 when it excluded the strong evidence of the prior falls coupled with Ms. Higgs' own explanation as to why she had fallen in the past, that explanation being that she simply had a tendency not to lift her feet enough and she had a situation where she didn't lift her feet, and that evidence was excluded. That is an impermissible application of the law, and that effectively shifted the burden by not allowing us to present evidence of an alternative cause.
What did the district judge say when he granted the motion in limine and said, I'm excluding that evidence? How did he say he finds it's more prejudicial than probative?
He didn't, Your Honor. He didn't at all.
He just said, I find this is more prejudicial than...
He said something along the lines of, I find this because there was argument, whether it was a 404 argument, propensity, or whether it was the other side really never raised 403. The district court raised 403 and said, I find it that it's a 403 situation, and I find that he just, you know, recited the mantra that the probative value is substantially outweighed by the unfair prejudice.
Let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
To compound that problem, you say in your brief that at least three times opposing counsel then represented to the jury that the plaintiff had never fallen before. Tell us how that arose, assuming that's correct.
Yes, sir. So the judge said, I find it to be a 403 problem. I'm granting the motion. So we went into the trial with the pre-trial in limine ruling that there would be no evidence of prior falls in this case. The judge did allow me to introduce medical records. They were redacted to eliminate all mention of falls, all mentions of cause of falls. I wasn't allowed to use the deposition where she had admitted to a fall and explained the reasoning for the fall. I wasn't allowed to use Facebook postings where she had admitted that she had fallen in the reason.
He's asking you what happened when the plaintiff's lawyer, what did he say and when did he say it?
Yes, Your Honor. So at the rebuttal portion of the closing argument, the last thing the jury is hearing, plaintiff's counsel said on three separate occasions, and you know Mrs. Higgs has never fallen before, and you know she doesn't stumble and fall all the time, and something similar the third time. Three times on rebuttal where I didn't have a chance to contradict that, it went to the jury.
You leaped up immediately and objected.
I did not, Your Honor. Sadly, I did not. The case law indicates that at this point where you have a violation of a court order that the plaintiff's lawyer himself obtained, and he willfully violates it. And not only does he willfully violate a court order, he puts in front of the jury not only facts not in evidence, but facts which are flat not true. They're lies. They're not true. He violates that.
At this point, you have a chance to do several things. You can object. You can wait till argument's over and ask for some kind of curative instruction. There's a lot of things you could do. I don't know why I shouldn't say you waive this.
Because it's a fundamental deliberate violation of a court order. The case law, the McWhorter case, and the other case cited in our brief indicates that that is deprives Costa of a fair trial. It's substantially unjust for him to do that. That's a plain error, Your Honor. That's a plain error.
And so when did you first raise it in a motion for a new trial? When did you say anything about it? When the jury goes out, do you say anything then?
On the motion for new trial stage.
Motion for new trial. Yeah. So after the verdict, how long was the jury out?
They were about 3 hours, as I recall. About 3 hours, yes. So
And then when did you file a motion for a new trial?
It was within the time frame, Your Honor. I'm not sure exactly how many days.
30 days or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how many days it was, but we're certainly within the time frame. There's no argument that it was untimely. And the judge really didn't comment on it in his ruling on the motion for a new trial. So essentially what we have under the Aycock case, and the court's well aware of the standards, I know, Your Honor, Judge Hall has indicated in the Boston Scientific case most recently that this exclusion of evidence under 403 is strong medicine. It has to be narrowly circumscribed, it's used with caution. And the more essential the evidence is, the higher its probative value becomes under the Aycock decisions and the other decisions of this court.
If her problem is she doesn't lift her foot high enough, this is not tripping over a sill, this is a bucket in the, you know. So I'm not sure that this is so highly probative.
Well, it is, Your Honor, in the sense that it is evidence of an alternative explanation. This was an accident which was unwitnessed. Ms. Higgs is the only one that says she tripped over a bucket. And we're, as a defendant, we're entitled to, as part of our defense, introduce evidence of alternative causes, i.e., that she doesn't lift her feet high enough and that she has a tendency, as she said in her Facebook post, of tripping over thin air, and that she has a history, a well-documented, rock-solid history of falling on multiple occasions. One record, which we weren't allowed to use, says she had fallen once a month. So we had alternate causation evidence, which we were not allowed to present.
Was your theory that there wasn't a bucket there at all?
No, there was a bucket. There was a bucket in the vicinity because she said, I tripped and I saw a bucket there, but that's as good as it gets for Ms. Higgs. There was a bucket in the vicinity. The question is, was it an open and obvious bucket? Was it in the right position? Did she trip over it, or did she simply not lift her foot properly? And that's what caused the accident, alternate causation. Additionally, this evidence is super probative because it shows that Ms. Higgs herself knew that she had a tendency to fall. She knew she had mobility limitations. That goes to comparative fault. If Ms. Higgs knew that—
Let me ask you about that. As I understand it, the jury came back and found 85% of fault was with your client, 15% fault was with her client. Had this evidence come in, we don't know what the jury might have found.
We don't, Your Honor. What we do know is that I had probative evidence go directly on this comparative fault, which I wasn't allowed to provide to the jury. So Ms. Higgs is walking with two plates of food and maybe a drink, and she knows that she has fallen at least once a month, according to some of the records. She admitted to me in her deposition that she had a history of falling, that she falls over absolutely nothing. With that knowledge, the jury would use that knowledge to assess
comparative fault. She had two plates of food?
Yes, ma'am. And maybe a drink was her testimony. Two plates of food, maybe a drink, and the medical records indicate that she...
But your client would know people go to... It's a buffet, I assume, that people get two plates of food. So that's common.
That's not a problem, Your Honor. The testimony at trial was that if people have mobility problems, if they simply don't want to carry their food, there are attendants there that will bring the food from the buffet to the people's table.
Why was the bucket there? It seems like in a common area like this, there shouldn't be, even if they're open and obvious... buckets sitting around.
It's a busing station.
Uh-huh.
It's a busboy station where there's the trays with the dirty dishes. There's the cleaning. It's a disinfecting bucket.
I see.
And it's a question of where that bucket was. Was the bucket behind the busboy station, or was it around the corner?
I see.
Yes, ma'am. And that was the real question about where the bucket was. Okay. So there's a legitimate reason for it to be in that area, but she says it was around the corner, hidden, so when she came around the corner, she kicked the bucket and that's what caused her to fall. So that raises directly the question about what was the cause of the fall. So we have the evidence which is directly highly probative as to an alternative cause, i.e. that she just simply fell over nothing. She didn't lift her foot high enough as she had done many times in the past.
Let me ask you about damages.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, law practice has changed so much. Back when I practiced law a long, long time ago, we used to call them special damages. And let's say your special damages, your out-of-pocket damages. In this case, I think they were about $16,000.
Yes.
We would say you multiply that by five, that's a great settlement, or that would be a great judgment to have. As I understand it, this jury came back and awarded $1.3 million plus. How did they get to that?
Get to that, Your Honor, based upon factors outside the record. They get to that based upon improper argument. They get to that based upon the trial court not allowing me to tell the rest of the story.
He's asking you, did they argue so much for pain and suffering? Did they ask for 1.3? How did they get to 1.3?
He didn't ask for a specific amount. He started arguing about future medical expenses, where there was no evidence about future medical expenses. He was arguing about loss of enjoyment of life, where there was not much evidence about loss of enjoyment of life. And
did he put any figure, like 500 for pain and suffering? No figures.
No, there was no definitive number submitted. It was argument about Ms. Higgs being on the surgery table in the future, where there was absolutely no evidence of future medical costs.
Or argument that you did not object to at the time?
The argument I did object to, I believe the argument about future medical expenses, but some of that argument I did not object to, Your Honor.
And was that objection upheld?
It was sustained. I believe that one objection was sustained, the one I did make. But there was so much improper argument. And Judge Rustani, the problem is plaintiff's counsel is weaving in and out of proper versus improper argument literally within the same sentence. And it's nearly impossible to object to every single one of those things.
There was pain and suffering testimony, though, right?
She said she was in pain. The testimony was within 2 months.
She had surgery.
She did have surgery. She had
like
one surgery.
Right away.
Within about 2 weeks, she had surgery, yeah, yes. Right.
Surgery and PT over time. There was testimony about that. So
yes.
But you say there was no testimony about future medical expenses. You objected to that. The judge told the jury disregard it, and then the enjoyment of life, you didn't do anything about that.
Well, he was entitled to argue about loss of enjoyment of life. That's an element of...
All right, well, I thought you told me that was improper argument.
No. He was arguing that when she is on the surgery table in the future, she's not going to have an opportunity to come back to you and get compensation for that.
Okay, and there was no testimony about needing surgery in the future? And you objected to that and got a curative instruction?
No, Your Honor. I believe there was an objection to that. I'm not 100% sure on that. But what I can tell the court with certainty is that there was no evidence of future medical costs. In fact, that was stricken from the verdict form. Plaintiff's counsel insisted and argued and argued and argued that he didn't want that to go to the jury with that stricken out, that he wanted a clean verdict form without any reference to future medical expenses. Finally, the judge relented, Judge Kahn relented, and typed up a new verdict form. And then on closing argument, plaintiff's counsel says, you know, when Ms. Higgs is on that surgery table in the future, she's not gonna have another chance to come back and get any more money from you. When she is, when her shoulder deteriorates and those screws come loose, she can't come back to you and get any more compensation. So he got the future medical expenses in through what I call the back door.
But I thought you said you objected to that and the judge sustained the argument.
Judge, maybe I misspoke. I don't recall exactly what the objection was that I did make. Maybe I misspoke.
All right.
I don't recall exactly what the objection was. There was one objection. It was sustained. I don't know exactly if it was on that point or not. I apologize if I was unclear. But certainly he argued for future pain and suffering and future medical expenses through the back door by saying she's not going to be able to come back to you when she's on that surgery table in the future. That's improper argument. I didn't object to that. I don't believe, Your Honor. I don't believe, Your Honor. But again, I believe that rises to the level of plain error, just like a lawyer violating a pretrial order, not only in injecting facts which aren't in the record rises to the level of plain error, but also injecting facts which just are not true rises to the level of plain error. I see that my time is over, and if there's nothing at this point, I'll save the rest of my time for later.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Holman?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let me tell you, if you get me to exclude prior falls and you stand up and tell the jury that she has no prior falls, I'm going to sua sponte declare a mistrial. I tried cases 14 years. I don't understand. What are you thinking when you did that?
Yes,
Your Honor. Did you try the case?
Your Honor, I was second chairing the case.
Did you tell the jury? Who told the jury they were? She has no prior falls.
It was our lead counsel, Mr. Robert Chaffin.
Is he here?
No, Your Honor, he's not.
Okay.
However,
you didn't do it just once. I have it from the transcript three times, and it's very clear, and they can't say a thing about it. And that's fundamentally unfair. Do you agree with that? I don't know whether you waived it or not, but that is fundamentally unfair. Do you agree with that?
Your Honor, I agree that if it's as clear as Costa makes it out to be, it would be
fundamentally unfair. Okay, well, let me read you exactly what he said and why, and tell me why it's not clear.
I'd be happy to, Your Honor.
Okay, I hope you do. So let me go find where it is. What was the first statement while I looked for it? Quote what it is.
It's in the record at page 856.
State what your counsel said the first time. He's in rebuttal, is that right?
Yes, Your
rebuttal
Honor.
To which the other side can't respond?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and what does he say?
Mr. Chaffin said that Mrs. Higgs had never fallen before.
Right, and that was not true. That was a bold-faced lie.
No, that's incorrect, Your Honor.
Why is that?
The reason why is because our motion in limine, so this goes back to our motion.
No, wait a minute. I thought she admitted she had fallen before in her deposition.
She said she had tripped and fallen. She said she had slipped and fallen. She never testified that she had just spontaneously fallen down, which was a distinction that counsel for Costa made in his closing argument. That's not our distinction. That's a distinction that counsel for Costa made in the record in his closing
argument. All right, here's what he said. Did you know that Ms. Higgs has never fallen before, never been injured before, never had an accident before? Okay, whether slipped and fall. That's what he says, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's what he
said. Never been injured before. Is that a false statement?
That is, yes,
Your Honor. Okay, never had an accident before. Is that a false statement?
Well, insofar as, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, because she said, I slipped and fell before I didn't just fall. And then the next time, that's at 248, then 253, I don't know if that gives you a risk of falling or not. She had never fallen before, never had. That was false, unless you want to try to say tripped and falling. It sounds like, you know what that sounds like, what is the meaning of is. But that's what it sounds like to me. She said she'd never fallen before, and you say why that wasn't a lie is because she said she had slipped and fallen as opposed to an accident fall or something. Is that why you say that's not a lie?
Yes, Your Honor. It's just
okay. And then he says, third time at 256, three pages later, and she didn't fall down and stumble all the time. That one's a little more. But she said in a deposition she had fallen once a month or something like that. Did she say that in the deposition?
No, Your Honor. That's a remark.
What did she say about once a month in the deposition?
She doesn't say anything about falling once a month.
Okay.
That's a claim that missed that.
Okay, so why does that not, under fairness, require a new trial?
Your Honor, it doesn't, under fairness, require a new trial for a number of reasons. First of all, as I just said, we had a cognizable argument that was not something that was excluded under the motion to limine, because her spontaneously falling down for her knees giving way, for example, was not something that came up in her deposition.
I couldn't on that occasion, her knee, that was a possible what could have happened here. Her knees could have given way.
And she never said that in her deposition.
I know that, but that's if that had happened to her quite a few times before, they could have shown that could possibly have been a causation here, right? If that had come in, right?
Yes, but they didn't have evidence to that effect. They had trip and fall, slip and fall evidence. They didn't have knees giving out, falling down on your own evidence.
I thought you just said she testified in the deposition sometimes her knees gave way.
No, Your Honor. She only...
What did she testify in her deposition?
In her deposition, which is in the record at page 41 and 42, she testifies that she has slipped on ice in the past because she's from Michigan, and that she has tripped going up or down stairs, and once in...
Because she doesn't lift her foot up enough.
Yes, Your Honor. And once she believes that she kicked a chair leg in her daughter's house and caught herself. Those are the only that's the only testimony she gave.
Okay, now, and that's fine. So she has fallen before.
Fallen, tripped and fallen and slipped and fallen.
She's had accidents before.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, she's been injured before.
She said
from falling accidents.
She said that 10 years before she tripped on some stairs and broke her foot, more than 10 years prior to this incident.
Okay, that's the last time she had medical attention for a fall?
That's the last time she had medical attention for a fall.
Okay.
According to her deposition.
Let me ask you this. In response to Judge Hull's questions, you admitted, if I heard you correctly, that your co-counsel made at least one incorrect statement to the jury. Why wouldn't that in and of itself, standing alone, be enough for us to send this case back for a new trial?
It would not be enough, Your Honor, because it does not meet the onerous burden of plain error, which is the burden that Costa has to meet because it failed to object. These arguments, which the former Fifth Circuit said in the Woods versus Burlington Northern case, these arguments, which were apparently so severe and egregious at trial, went by numerous times without so much as a peep from Costa's experienced trial counsel, who has 32 years of experience trying cases, maritime cases in the Southern District of Florida, and knows the rules, and for whatever reason, reasons known only to him, deliberately chose not to object multiple times. And if you look at this court's past cases, there are much more egregious things that have been said where this court has refused to find plain error.
How would I object? I've got a ruling by a United States District Judge on a motion in limine telling me that any evidence about prior falls is more prejudicial than probative. What do I say to the jury in an objection?
To the judge, Your
Honor? To a false statement that your co-counsel just made to this jury. What do I say in my objection?
You object. You say, Your Honor, we have an objection. May we approach, Your Honor?
This counsel, is a false statement that this lawyer just made.
Yes,
what do you think that judge would have done?
We ask that you give, I think Costa should have asked for a curative instruction, they could have asked for a mistrial, they could have asked Judge Kahn to reopen the evidence.
Do you agree that should have been struck if they had timely objected, or would you be arguing at the bench? You've already said her prior falls are irrelevant and they have nothing to do here. So those were different. You just said that to me. You just said why this was not a lie. You say it's not inaccurate. You would have been making that argument. We didn't do anything wrong here.
We would have presented the argument at the bench to Judge Kahn that I just presented to Your Honor, and perhaps Judge Kahn would have overruled their objection. Perhaps he would have sustained it, at which point they would have had a number of remedies at their disposal to ask for under the rules, but they asked for none of them. They did nothing. They made not one sound in response to this argument, which is apparently...
And I wouldn't jump up, and when I don't have a rebuttal now, I wouldn't have jumped up right in the middle of the testimony. I might have asked if the jury goes out. I might have raised it then and perfected the record, although we have a lot of case law that says when you've raised an issue on a motion in limine, you don't have to resurrect it again at the close of the evidence.
And I would point out, Your Honor, we closed the evidence at like 4:30, 4:45 that day, so we went home for the day. The jury deliberated for about 10 or 15 minutes. We went home for the day. We came back the next morning. So counsel for Costa had an entire afternoon and night to sleep on this and think about whether or not to go in the next morning and say, Judge, I need a mistrial, and decided not to do
it. I've tried cases. It's kind of a rule, a culture of the place that you don't object during the argument. I don't know what the rules are, where the culture is, where you are. Is that frowned upon where you are?
No, Your Honor, it's not. And
people
in this
jump
case,
up all the time during closing arguments of other counsel without a problem?
Yes, Your Honor, and in fact, counsel for Costa objected during our closing argument. The objection that he made was to a different remark, which pertained to Mrs. Higgs deserves to be treated fairly. He objected. Judge Kahn sustained his objection. So the only time they complained, Judge Kahn gave them exactly what they wanted. And then these other allegedly egregious comments are made, and not so much of a sound comes from counsel table from Costa. In response.
Why wasn't this excluded evidence of prior falls also extremely relevant to the comparative damages issue?
It wasn't extremely, in my opinion, and again, I could tell you about Judge Kahn's ruling, our contention is it's not extremely relevant because the only thing she testified to was slipping on ice, which has nothing to do with tripping on a bucket, and tripping on stairs, tripping going up and down stairs.
I thought you said in her deposition she also said every now and then her knees just buckled or gave away.
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. I said that she did not. She never said that. She never gave that testimony. And that was what Mr. Chaffin was referring to when after counsel for Costa in his closing argument said maybe it wasn't really a bucket, maybe her knees just gave out. Mr. Chaffin then stood up in response, said she'd never fallen before. And what he was talking about was spontaneous falls, not that she had never tripped or fallen or slipped or fallen, because they had no evidence in her deposition that she had ever just fallen down.
One last question, and I'll leave you alone, about why I think this case probably deserves a new trial, and I'm speaking just for myself. How do you justify an award of damages of $1.3+ million in this case where I call them special damages, I don't know what, and I was a trial lawyer. But we used to call them special damages. $16,000 in special damages here. Clearly she had some pain and suffering, I go along with that. She had an operation. She had screws put in, she had a plate put in, but recovered pretty well, as I understand the state of the record. How do you justify $1.3 million?
Because first, Your Honor, under the standard that's applicable, Judge Kahn applied the correct standard and he reached the correct result. Counsel mentioned—
What correct standard?
He applied the standard which we argue applies under maritime law, which is not this court standard from Bravo versus United States. That applying Florida state court law of size-tested verdicts is inapplicable because that only applies in Federal Tort Claims Act cases. That's a congressional mandate and a federal statute.
What is the standard that you claim applies?
The standard that Judge Kahn applied was to look at whether the verdict exceeds the amount established by the evidence, whether it shocks the conscience, and whether it indicates passion, prejudice, or some other improper motive. And in his motion for new trial order at page 942 of the record, he goes through a very detailed analysis of all of the evidence that he believed supported the verdict and goes through each of those prongs and arrives at a sound decision that the jury's verdict was not against the great weight of the evidence and did not shock the conscience and bared a rational relationship. Now, I want to address a question that you asked, Your Honor, Judge Dubina, about where the $500,000 came from. We don't know exactly where it came from because we can't be in the jury's mind, but we have a good idea. It came from counsel for Costa. In their closing argument, the first lawyers to mention a dollar figure was counsel for Costa. He stood up and said, plaintiff's counsel is going to ask you for a number for general damages, probably something like $500,000.
But was that on the verdict form or was it just a general verdict form?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It was what? I don't understand.
Was $500 on the verdict form or did they break it out or was it just a general verdict form?
They gave, there was a line for past general damages, future general damages, and a line for past medical expenses.
Okay, and so what were the first two lines?
For past general damages, they awarded $500,000.
Okay.
For future general damages, they awarded $800,000. And they awarded the $16,000 and change that they were instructed to award.
And you've cross-appealed on that issue?
Yes, Your Honor. And to be clear, the relief we're seeking is only insofar as this court finds that particular item of damages is separate and distinct enough that the court can remand only with respect to that issue. To the extent the court finds that it's not separate and distinct enough, then we withdraw our appeal on that issue and we ask the court to affirm the judgment in its entirety. However, the jury heard $500,000 as a suggestion of what it should award in general damages, not initially from us, from counsel for Costa, and then they go in and they award exactly that. We know the jury was working hard on its calculation of general damages because 10 or 15 minutes after they retired to deliberate, they sent out a question, if we decide that we're going to award general damages, how do we make that calculation? They ask that. And so if you look at—
What did the judge tell them?
He said you have the instructions and it's in the instructions.
And did they have the instructions in writing out in the jury room?
Yeah, Your Honor, I'm not exactly sure if they had I believe that they did because he referred them back to the instructions and what those say in terms of general damages.
Can I
I ask a question? Did her medical records indicate that she had fallen a number of times in 2014?
Your Honor, I don't recall, as I stand here, I don't recall exactly what her medical records said on that issue.
That she had fallen 5 or 6 times between 14 and 15? You don't remember that either?
Again, Your Honor, I don't, without referencing, without looking at the medical records. But I would say that Costa was allowed, if you'll see in the record, to present a substantial amount of evidence of her being a fall risk, being unstable, having knee problems, being wobbly. They presented a number of pieces of evidence. Counsel said 8 times in his closing argument, she's a fall risk. So to act as though this prior fall evidence was the smoking gun, without which Costa had nothing, is simply not true. We also know that
it was key evidence, and you were successful in getting it excluded, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's a reason. Why did you file the motion in limine to exclude it? Because you thought the probative value was outweighed by the prejudice. That's what you told the court, right?
Yes, but we
it
didn't
was
seek
highly
to exclude
prejudicial.
It. Yes, right? Your Honor. But we didn't seek to exclude it. We asked the court to instruct Costa to approach the bench before going into it and to get a definitive ruling on the record. That was the relief sought in our motion in limine, not an outright.
But what exclusion. Did the district court rule?
He said your motion in limine is granted, meaning right. He granted our request that they have to approach, which is why it's a tentative ruling, not a definitive ruling, and why Costa must prove plain error with respect to that ruling, not abuse of discretion. Okay. This court, and if I may, I see that my time is up, Your Honor, so if I may briefly.
Thank you. Well, I think we have it, unless it's something entirely new.
No, Your Honor, just to once again clarify, we ask the court to affirm the judgment in its entirety with the exception of the collateral source issue.
Thank you. For the appellant, Mr. McAlpin, you reserve 4.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was the motion in limine a tentative ruling?
Not at all, Your Honor. It's very clear. The judge says the motion is granted. I will grant the
granted
motion.
Granted to what? What else did he say in that order?
He said, I'll grant the motion in limine. The motion in limine asked, and it's a broad motion in limine, asked to preclude any evidence of prior falls. That's what it asked for.
Period.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. If we look at the motion in limine, it says that. The judge says, I'm going to grant the motion. I find it's a 403 issue, you know, probative value, unfair prejudice, outweighs probative
value. You went to trial believing there was no way you could introduce any evidence of prior falls of the plaintiff.
100%. And that's why we redacted the medical records to delete any reference to prior slip and falls, delete any reference to having slipped once a month. Let me just
all right, can you answer Judge Rustani's question? She had one about
absolutely.
Whether there was, I think you said two.
In the medical records evidence of 6 falls in 2014 and number of falls between July 2014-15.
Absolutely, Judge. Let me just tick off what the medical records showed and what they were redacted. Trial exhibit 7.1 indicated that there was an injury to the right knee, status post, fall after tripping. That's exhibit. Trial exhibit 7.1, it was redacted to delete that language I just read.
Do we have a date on that fall?
Yes, Your Honor. That was August 2013, 16 months before the accident.
Keep going. Give us the dates of the prior falls, say within the
yes,
previous 2 to 3 years.
Yes, Your Honor.
Shown by medical records.
Yes, Your Honor. Trial exhibit 7.4, 3 months before the fall, it's September 2014, about 3 months before the fall, indicated that Ms. Higgs had fallen in past year at least once a month. I believe that's an exact quote of what was redacted from that medical record 3 months before. Trial exhibit 7.9 is a July 2015 physical therapy initial evaluation. Now we're after the accident, and Ms. Higgs is getting evaluated for her therapy, and the therapist is giving a history of her past medical condition. And this is what Judge Rustani asked about. 5-6 falls within prior year. Balance problem, the patient does tend to trip on her foot. That's 7.9. There was two Facebook posts which were also excluded. Exhibit 69.4, it was attached to our motion, to our opposition to the motion in limine. I have it too, referring to a post where saying people can trip over thin air. Ms. Higgs said, I have that trait too. Exhibit 69.5, which again is in opposition to the motion in limine. Ms. Higgs said in a Facebook post, I've been walking wrong for years. In her deposition, so those are the medical records in the Facebook posts. In her deposition, I asked the questions, and I'll just read exactly what it is so the court can see what Ms. Higgs testified and what we weren't allowed to present. And I'm on page 33 of Ms. Higgs' pretrial deposition. Before you went on the ship, had you ever fallen before? Answer, no. I trip sometimes, but no, not really, no. Question, not really, not really. It's kind of a vague answer. Answer, I know. Let me ask the question again so we're all clear. Before you went on the Costa Luminosa in December 2014, had you ever tripped before and fallen down? Answer, yes. I'm just trying to think because, yes, I have fallen before, yes. Question, how many times? Answer, I think three or four. Question, when were they in proximity to the Costa trip? In other words, was it a month before, or was it a week before? Was it 2 weeks before, 6 weeks before? Answer, probably maybe a year before. And then we continue. She starts talking about ice. I bring her back to falls. I'm on page 34 now, line 18. We're talking about...
Your time is expired. I have to kind of keep it balanced, so... I think we have it.
Okay, thank you so much, Your Honor. So we ask that the court reverse and remand the case for a new trial. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll take a recess at this time.